Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, yes, welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 51, and this is for June the 17th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack. This show's come to you a little bit later than normal because we had to go and take a run out to the mall tonight and had to pick up a few things. I'll give you a little bit of backstory about that. But first, let's get started here with the intro, and then we'll talk about the backstory about why we had to go to the mall when I had to do my podcast. Folks, this show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it's here. Check out all the great tech shows at techpodcast.com. Please check out my website. If you have time, you can find it at tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows. You can also leave me a voice message at 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, by all means, please email me. And you can send those to jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter as @technoman. I did want to throw a little backstory out there before we get started. So what happened was, we have a pool here at our house, and I had this great idea, this great epiphany, if you will, I guess you could call it, where last summer I said, look, the kids weren't getting in the pool and they just wanted to sit in the house all day and they didn't really want to get in it. So this was the year before last. And what happened was the water kept getting really, really green. So I said last year I had a great idea. I said, we're just not going to open a pool at all last year. We're just going to leave the pool closed and we're not going to worry about it for that summer. Well, what happened was I decided to open the pool this year. So we took our cover off, and the cover ripped naturally because that's what happens sometimes with pool covers. And everything that was on the cover went into the pool. And that was about, probably about at least 25, maybe 50 pounds worth of leaves and garbage that was on the cover. Now, if you've never had a pool before, if the water's not clear, you do something called shock. You shock the water. Now, to shock that water, what I had to do was I had to buy bags of shock. Each bag is, I think it's a one-pound bag of shock. And most people told you, and I looked on the internet, you know, I said, hey, how do I clear this water up? They said, look, you normally use two bags, so use 2 one-pound bags of shock. Well, after putting 11 bags in, or 11 pounds of shock, our water never did clear up. It was a disaster. And I believe it's because I didn't open it last year, and with all the summer and all the warm weather and everything heating up underneath that tarp, that winterization tarp, I think what happened was, believe it or not, I think it built a lot of algae up in there. And all the shock in the world just couldn't fix that with all the leaves in there, and it was just a horrible, horrible mess. So I had a great idea yesterday. I decided that we're going to unhook the pump, unhook the filter, and we threw a sump pump in and we drained the pool. This morning, I had to go out, and I cleaned out all the water pool, you know, the sludge from the bottom of it, dumped about 50 buckets of water out of the pool. So, yep, my back is kind of hurting tonight. Now, with that said, we had to go out tonight because we needed a new floater device to put the chlorine in. Because once I got my pool all cleaned out and everything all cleaned up, I have 2 garden hoses going in there from my house, refilling that pool and getting it filled back up and getting it ready for the summer. Now that's all clean. I mean, I had to go in there and physically get on my hands and knees today with a bucket of Clorox water and clean that up. And why am I talking about this on a tech show? I don't know. But I just wanted to let you know why we are recording this a little bit later. So if you were looking around, poking around, and hoping for the show to come down to your pod catcher at 8:30 or so or 9 o'clock, and you're like, wow, where is Jack tonight? That's where I was. We had to run out to the mall. Got there a little bit later, and the wife had to do a couple shopping for a couple things. I had to buy some new goggles. You know, you got to have goggles when you have a pool. And that brought us home a little bit later. So anyway, I'm recording right now. It's almost 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time instead of 8. But hey, the show must go on. That is what the motto is, right? The show must go on. The first story I have for you tonight is just a brief mention from the trenches from that client I've been working on. I told you about this, I believe, last week, and we talked a little bit about the VPN thing. I'm still having trouble getting the WatchGuard firewall client to work on a Windows 8 workstation. I don't know what it is. I don't know if WatchGuard has to come out with a new client, if they need an updated client. I don't understand it. It seems like the Windows 7 computer, the old laptop that the client was using, it seems like it'll connect fine, and I configured it all with the new IP addresses, and it seems to be working right. So if anybody has any dealings with WatchGuard, the WatchGuard firewall company, it's a red box. If you have any information you can send me, by all means do that, because the only way you can download the client is from the WatchGuard device. WatchGuard doesn't have that client anywhere else out there. Or if somebody knows of a client that will work on a Windows 8 workstation and I can configure it to work with that WatchGuard firewall, I would really, really like to hear from you. Either drop me an email at jackstechcorner@gmail.com, or you can call that voicemail line, just leave me a message, and I will retrieve that, and I would be so happy for you to do that. I do want to share an email from you here. This is from Martin. Martin, we've been emailing back and forth, and I'll tell you about where Martin comes from. And he found the show anyway. So here's the email. I'm a new listener, and I'm really enjoying the show. Martin, thank you so much. I really do appreciate that, you tuning into the show. I wanted to comment on show 50. That was last week, obviously. As being a system and a network admin, I have deployed and configured firewalls for my clients. I want to thank you for the reminder to change your gateway if you're using the same IP address as your ISP router. I set up things just a bit differently. Now, this is in reference to the show we did last week on VPNs. And Martin, as I've been listening to his podcast, which I'm going to tell you about in just a minute, it's great because he deals with a lot of clients. He is from what I picked up on his show, he has his own company. And in that computer business, that computer company, he has many clients he works with. And he wanted to give the feedback on how he sets this up. So this is how Martin does it. What I will do is give my clients a different IP address scheme from the default router. I will use Comcast's default 10.0.10.1 as an example. I will give my clients something like a 172.16.1.1 range. So the new firewall is 172.16.1.1. DHCP will be handled by either the firewall or the router or a DHCP server, depending on the size of the company. So the new gateway for the site is 172.16.1.1. If you remember, that is the firewall gateway. So you're pointing them back to that firewall gateway. And the WAN port, the wide area network port on the firewall or router, will be strictly assigned to 10.0.10.2. Because remember now, it's going to talk to 10.0.10.1, and that is Comcast's default. The Comcast router usually has a DHCP scope of 0.100 to 0.199. I will shrink this down to 0.100 to 0.105. This will allow me to do tests if or when there's network issues with the ability to get internet access outside of the firewall. Great show. Keep up the good work. Now, Martin is the host of a great podcast that I just started listening to tonight, Martin. Honestly, I didn't know about it until you emailed me, and that's because there's so many of them. I did hear of your podcast before, but it is called Geeksters. And you can find it at podnuts, that's podnutz.com/geeksters. I also found it on iTunes. I pulled it right up, and I was able to subscribe to it tonight. I listened to show, I think it was 119, so it was a couple weeks ago. If you look back, I believe tonight he was recording, or today he was recording 121. But it's a great podcast. Martin, I appreciate it. I enjoy listening to your topics. He has a guest host on, and I think that's wonderful. And if you ever want to be a guest on a show, You can either get a hold of Martin here or get a hold of me, and I will get you on tips from the server room. I'd love to talk to somebody and have a different view and different opinions of what I talk about. Now, in tonight's show, I thought I would talk to you a little bit about VLANs and why we should or should not use them. First, let's start by talking about what is a VLAN and how to set up a VLAN on a Cisco switch. Have you ever wondered what a virtual LAN or VLAN is, or been unclear as to why you would want one? If so, I have been in your place one time or another. Since then, I've learned a lot about what a VLAN is and how it can help you. So this is a little bit of knowledge for you, a little background on VLANs. First of all, what is a LAN? Obviously, if you're listening to this show, you already know the answer to that question, and you know it is a local area network. Now, with a local area network, it's not really hard to understand what a VLAN is, because a VLAN is a virtual local area network. So the local area network is defined by all devices in the same broadcast domain. If you remember routers stop broadcasts, switches just forward them. Now, you folks know I get a lot of interns in my field, and I have a lot of these young college kids come to me that work with me. And unfortunately, when you talk about virtual anything, they understand virtual switching. The reason they understand virtual switching is because most colleges out there today teach by using a Windows box with some virtual machines set up on it, and they use all the virtual switching in those virtual machines, which is a wonderful learning tool. But you have to have your hands on hardware. If you don't understand hardware, you're going to graduate college and never be able to hook up anything. Now you're kind of stuck. Because unless a business is all virtual, which most businesses aren't, right? Most businesses have desks, computers, laptops, iPads, wireless access points, and actual hardware switches in their racks, and you have to know how to hook that up. So when I talk to these interns about virtual anything, they're, oh, yeah, I use virtual switches. Yeah, that's how we set up all of our networks. No, a virtual LAN. A virtual LAN is actually created. A VLAN is a broadcast domain created by switches. Normally, it is a router creating that broadcast domain, which VLANs, a switch can with a VLAN, a switch can create the broadcast domain. Now, this works by you, the administrator, putting some switch ports in a VLAN other than one, the default VLAN. So all your switches do have a VLAN basically set up in them, and if you ever looked into the configuration, you will see that. And that default VLAN is number one. Now, what you want to do is you want to assign some different ports to a different VLAN. And the reason we're doing this is because you're routing those packets around your normal traffic. It's almost on the same grounds, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's almost on the same grounds as a VPN or virtual private network, because we know a VPN creates a tunnel through the internet, basically, or some people call it a pipe. But anyway, it's a secure connection between you and something else over the internet, so nothing else can get in that pipe, so you hope. A VLAN kind of will do the same thing, but what you are separating here is you're separating your packets out on its own separate subnet of IP addresses. That way, that traffic can move through that switch almost as if it was its own private network altogether, but it's virtualized. So all ports in a single VLAN are in a single broadcast domain. Because switches can talk to each other, some ports on switch A can be in VLAN 10, and other ports on switch B can be in VLAN 10. Broadcast between these devices will not be seen on any other port in any other VLAN other than 10. However, these devices can all communicate because they are on the same VLAN without additional configuration. They would not be able to communicate with any other device not in their VLAN. So there we go. So if you have a VLAN set up as VLAN number 10, they say, I like to run them in order, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, just because I'm kind of accustomed to doing things that way. But if you created a VLAN and it is VLAN number 10, and switch 1 goes across your network and hits switch 2 and sees VLAN 10, it's going to communicate across VLAN 10 to switch 3 to switch 4 until it gets back to its destination, wherever that may be. As it's doing that, VLAN 1 traffic will never see it because it's on its own separate virtual local area network. Now you're catching on. Folks, there are other ways you can do this, but the traffic will sooner or later cross paths with each other. Now, the way I've done this in the past was I typically, and a lot of people that have worked for me before will tell you, that I like to set up a separate fiber optic switch into each individual wiring closet. And then I separate those wiring closets to, let's say, a floor. Let's say you have an office building and there's 4 floors in the office building. So floor 1 would have its fiber, floor 2 would have its fiber, 3 fiber, and 4 fiber. All the devices will go into each of those individual switches. Now, where it differs from a VLAN is, once all that traffic gets back to my main switch closet, I dump those all into a fiber backbone switch. Right? Could be layer 3, layer 4. Anyway, the backbone switch, you dump it into there. That is where all the transmissions are going to communicate together again. But I do kind of segregate the traffic going out to those individual switches because I'm segregating it over each piece of fiber. Now, to make that better, what I could do, and what I probably will do here in the future, is I would like to go in there and take each one of those fibers and give it its own VLAN channel. That way, each individual floor will then be communicating on its own virtual local area network, and it won't interfere with that other traffic going across the network. Hopefully that's not too confusing. That seems like a lot. Seems like a mouthful to talk about there. That pause, by the way, was for tonight's beer. Tonight's beer is George Killian's Red. That is the preferred beer of the evening. Again, if you've never tried it, pick yourself up a 6-pack or a case of George Killian's Red, made by the Coors Brewing Company in Boulder, Colorado. Okay, folks, so are VLANs required? It is important to point out that we don't have to configure a VLAN until your network gets so large and has so much traffic that you need one. Many times, people simply use VLANs because the network they are working on was already using them, and that's true. If it's already built, don't mess with it. And that's what a lot of my interns we have come in and they say, look, I want to learn about the firewall. If the firewall is working, you don't blow the configuration and reconfigure it. Because we have a lot of static routes. We have a lot of ins open, a lot of outs open. The traffic's flowing. We don't want to really mess with that. Same with your VLANs. If you get a job in a company and there's 4 or 5 VLANs running and it's working, leave it alone. Go back to last week's show, though, and listen to the part I talk about documentation, because you need to document that stuff. But other than that, leave it alone. It's working. Another important fact is that on a Cisco switch, VLANs are enabled by default, and all devices are already in a VLAN. The VLAN that all those devices are already in is VLAN 1. This was the same thing with our Cisco wireless box. When I first installed the Cisco wireless unit with our Cisco wireless access points, the default VLAN is VLAN 1. Now, I can build other VLANs on top of there, and those, now on wireless, it's a little different, because when you're building your VLANs there, you're giving them different SIDs, you can give them different passwords, and there's so much you can do with that. Little different, same principle though. So by default, you can just use all the ports on the switch and all devices will be able to talk to one another because all the ports are transmitting across that VLAN 1. So when do you need a VLAN? You need to consider using VLANs when any of the following situations occur. Okay. You have more than 200 devices on your LAN. You have a lot of broadcast traffic on your LAN. Think about that. So if you have a lot of broadcast traffic on your local area network, he may be starting to need to segregate that down a little bit. Groups of users need more security or being slowed down by too many broadcasts. Now, this does happen a lot, and this happens in very big networks. I've seen it happen in a lot of schools I've worked for, across the state. If I get called in and somebody needs some help with a networking issue at a school, oftentimes we'll see that the finance department or your administration department in a school, when school's out in the summertime, it seems like the traffic's flowing great, the internet speed's good, their broadcast is working great, and they're communicating with the servers fine. When school comes back in session and we get all those kids back on and all the teachers back on the network, what seems to happen then is the network, the broadcast, become very overloaded on the switching circuits. And the switches start to bog down a little bit because now you start to have more bottlenecks. And I've seen this in a lot of schools that I've been called into to work on this stuff. Not so much in small businesses. Most of my small businesses I work for have anywhere from 5 to maybe 10 computers. So it's not really that big of a deal there. Groups of users need to be on the same broadcast domain because they are running the same applications. An example would be a company that has a VoIP. And if you're using voice over IP phones, folks, you better set that up on a VLAN because it sends out a lot of broadcast traffic and it will pound and bombard your network. You need to have your VoIP, voice over IP, on VLANs. The users using the phone could be on a different VLAN, not with the regular users, or just to make a single switch into multiple virtual switches. So there's some great possibilities there, folks, that you can do with these switching circuits. And I am going to be digging into this even more in my networks. I mean, I'm going to be using it even more in the bigger networks. And like I said, with schools, we've already been working on it and using it out, and it works very well. So why not just subnet your network? Why not just break your network down into subnets? Would it help? Would it make anything faster? Would it make it better? A common question is, why not just subnet your network instead of using VLANs? Each VLAN should be in its own subnet. Remember I told you that at the top of the show? We talked about each VLAN being in its own subnet. The benefit that a VLAN provides over a subnetted network is that devices in different physical locations, not going back to the same router, can be on the same network. The limitation of subnetting a network with a router is that all devices on that subnet must be connected to the same switch, and that switch must be connected to a port on the router. Again, this brings me back to those fibers on an office floor, on the four floors. Remember, we're bringing them all back to the same switch, and that same fiber switch goes into that one router. So that's where all the broadcast traffic will be hitting each other, even though the floors are segregated, but everything's on the same subnet. So sooner or later, those devices will talk to one another. Now, how can devices on different VLANs communicate? Devices on different VLANs can communicate with a router or a layer 3 switch. As each VLAN is on its own subnet, a router or layer 3 switch must be used to route between the subnets. So each subnet then could be routed to the other subnets, and then you can make it talk there. So again, you have to get to a certain point, and then you got to route those subnets. So if we look at this, what is trunk port? If we talk about a trunk port, this is when there's a link between two switches or a router and a switch that carries the traffic of more than one VLAN. That port is a trunk port. A trunk port must run a special trunking protocol. The protocol used by Cisco, proprietary inter-switch link, ISL, or the IEEE standard, which is 802.1. So how can you create a VLAN? Well, configuring a VLAN can vary very different between different models of switches. Your goal, no matter what, is to use, if you're using a Cisco, the commands is to create a new VLAN and put each port on the proper VLAN. Now, let's say we wanted to create VLANs 5 and 10. When we want to put ports 2 and 5 in VLAN 5, marketing, and ports 4 and 5 in VLAN 10, human resources, on a Cisco 2950 switch. Here's how you would do it. At this point, only ports 2 and 3 should be able to communicate with each other, and ports 4 and 5 should be able to communicate. This is because each of these are on their own VLAN. For the device on port 2 to communicate with the device on port 4, you'd have to configure the trunk port to a router so that it can strip off the VLAN information and route the packet and add them back to the VLAN information. Now, let's cover one more thing here, is what do VLANs offer? VLANs offer high performance for medium and large local area networks because they limit broadcasts. As the amount of traffic and the number of devices grow, so does the number of broadcast packets. By using VLANs, you are containing the broadcast. VLANs also provide security because you essentially are putting one group of devices in one VLAN on their own network. Now think about that for a minute, folks, and let that spin around in your head there, because that's exactly what we're talking about. Remember I told you earlier that a VLAN is a sort of a VPN, but a VPN builds that tunnel through the internet. We know what a VPN does, or even through your network if you want to do that, and you're afraid somebody in your house or in your wireless network is getting to something in your system. I don't know. Maybe you want to VPN into your computer. But a VLAN will do basically the same thing because you're isolating traffic away from the other folks. You're not really going through the network with a secure tunnel, but you're very much isolating them from the other ports. Because, folks, most switches out there, most that I've come across, and I use a lot of 3COM switches who was purchased by Cisco. I mean, let's face it, Cisco owns just about everything in the world and a little bit more, right? Well, what happens is, the 3COM switches now use more of a GUI interface. Cisco uses a lot of command line interface, and I know Cisco has a GUI, but I never use it. I'm more of a command guy when it comes to Cisco programming. But you have to go in and either GUI, the GUI interface or the command line, look at your ports. I guarantee right now, if you've never configured that switch, all the ports are assigned to VLAN 1. So what happens is, let's say, for instance, we use a lot of the fiber switches and a switch with a fiber ability. So we have a fiber ability to feed them with fiber optics. And there's 4 fiber lines on there because it takes up ports 21, 22, 23, and 24 of my switches. So those Cat5 ports are closed and I can't use those ports any longer. But I can use the fiber ports, and those fiber ports can be VLAN. So what that allows me to do is, if I have one fiber coming in from, say, use that office building again, floor 1. Floor 1, port 1 could be VLAN 1. Floor 2, port number 2 would be VLAN 2. Office 3 floor goes to port 3. VLAN 3. Very good, you're catching on. And floor 4 will come into my fiber switch on port 4, and I will set that to VLAN 4. All those can go through the trunk port, and you can take the trunk port out of your last port, your port 5, port 6, whatever, can be your trunking port, and that's where it can strip off the VLAN information, communicate all those packets, put them back on your server, send them out to the internet, do what they want. When they come back, it will hand the VLAN information back on. It will send those back out and put those back into the proper perspective of whatever VLAN they came from. That is how that handoff works, folks. That is what makes this really, really golden. I'm going to go back though a little bit there, a little ways back anyway, because it said, let me find this here. if you have more than 200 devices on your land, well, let me tell you what, folks. There's a lot of schools that I've dealt with that do a bring your own device. There is many more than 200 devices. They have one flat network, we call it, with one subnet of IP addresses, and everything is working fine. There's no slowdowns. There's no bottlenecks. Everything is working well and communicating properly. So that's the key elements. You know, if you're building your network, don't go by just reading something on the internet and say, oh, 200 devices, you need a VLAN. That's a good guesstimate, I guess. But you know what? Know your network. When your network is beginning to have too many broadcast packets, if you have an area where the network connections are dropping a lot, it could be those broadcast packets are having a collision somewhere. There could be an issue down the line. That is when you need to think about VLANs. That's when the VLANs come into more perspective and you start to put yourself out there and try to figure that out. I tell the interns I get, you know, when they come to me, I say, look, we are not only computer and networking specialists. And I have a young man now that I tell him all the time is, we are also an investigator. It's our job to investigate what's going on with that client's computer. And when that client calls you on the phone and says something like, here's one. I had a client today call. And you get this phone call all the time. I can't get on the internet. My internet connection is not working. I don't know what's wrong with it. And as I investigated and talked to the client a little bit, I said, okay, well, what's going on? So when you bring up the web browser, it's saying web page can't be found. It's no. When I bring up the web browser, it's saying the EXE is corrupt or something. So wait, now wait a minute. So what we're looking at is we are looking at a problem with a software issue. And it happened to be Chrome. So I said, well, look for the big E on your screen and click on that. Oh, Jack, you're marvelous. Thanks. The internet's working. And they called their internet provider and all this stuff. It was a computer issue. But people don't understand that. That's what makes us the investigator. So when somebody calls and says, hey, my network drive keeps disappearing through the day. I mean, I reconnect, it's there. A couple hours later, it disappears. It's our job to go and we have to investigate why is that happening. And it may be, as in tonight's show showed you, it may be just too much broadcast traffic. Maybe you need to set up a VLAN for that particular group of folks. I mean, it's quite possible. But folks, I want to thank everybody for signing up for the server courses. It's been fantastic. It's been sensational. You guys and girls out there signing up. There's a lot of you taking the course. There's a lot of people that finished the course and it's already earned a certificate. And I have been receiving a lot of emails that says, Jack, do these courses get you ready for the Windows 2008 or 2012 certification course? You know, the Microsoft Cert courses. And my response is straightforward. The courses are a tool. It will help you. I do not follow the exact curriculum they use, but all these shows, all these videos will help you to prepare for that test. But I guarantee if you're taking those tests, and I've taken them, you have to prepare yourself. So you get a couple books along with that. You know, find out whatever extra aids you can find. Take the server course and use the extra aids if you want to earn your Microsoft Cert certificates. Also remember, if you don't have high-speed internet, you don't need to sign for the online server course. Go to jackstechcorner.com, click on the link, and you can buy the DVD with the videos on there. So folks, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi Server from A to Z, that's install to administration. And as I said, they will help you prepare for the Microsoft Cert tests, but you're going to need some extra text to read to. But sign up for one of these online courses. You can find us at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. That's tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look at the online class link at the top of the page. Click on that. The courses are self-paced. You watch a video and you take a quiz. And folks, the one thing I can tell you is these courses, once you sign up, it is a forever course. When you complete it, I don't delete you. I leave you in there. Because I feel it's a great reference material also. You can go back and you can reference that. But don't sign up thinking, oh, I got to sign up. You know, I've been taking college classes online, and I'll sign up. They'll be like, this is an eight-week course. If you're not done in 8 weeks, they kick you out. That's it. You don't get anything. These courses take as long as you want. Take your time, relax, enjoy the course. Once again, you can find it at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. When you complete the course, you will receive a certificate, which I will mail to you. So check it out, tipsfromserveroom.com. Folks, have a great work week. I'll be back here again next Tuesday night for another show, hopefully at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, is when I like to record these. And again, I'd like to say thanks to a special thanks, a shout out there again to Martin. And definitely do enjoy the podcast, The Geeksters. So if you want to check his show out, do that. It is a very informative and a very fun podcast to listen to. Thanks, folks, and I'll talk to everyone next week. Take care, and I'll see you then. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.